Good evening, and welcome to KCRW's Incendiary Opinions. Yesterday, we lost a literary and cultural icon. Vivian Stone died at his home in Berkeley, California at the age of 90. From the moment he burst onto the literary scene in 1951 with the novel Dishonored, until his recent unapologetic criticism of the Bush administration, Vivian Stone has always pushed the boundaries of literature and blurred the line between the written word and public persona. His non-professional life was legendary, in itself a lived-in expression of his writings. As a form of social critic, from subjects encompassing politics, race, masculinity, and feminism. At its core, the American experience of the latter half of the 20th century. From his very public bouts with Sonny Liston and Betty Friedan, his affiliation and endorsement of the Hells Angels, as well as the Black Panthers, to his Pulitzer Prize-winning book on the SLA and the Patty Hearst kidnapping, Stone has never pulled any punches. I recently had the unique privilege of speaking with Mr. Stone earlier this year after the publication of his last book, Roman Follies. Vivian Stone, thank you and welcome.
Thank you.
Your first book, Dishonored, was published when you were 20 and has, by many accounts, been called one of the best books written on the Second World War. The novel takes place during the war, yet it's set entirely on an Air Force base in Florida during a three-day period, and deals primarily with a specific racial incident and its consequences.
Yes, well, I actually had no combat experience during the war. In fact, I served the duration as a secretary, so I thought I'd write from that perspective.
When the book was published, it was thought it was written by a woman.
Well, the publication was a thorny issue at the time. I was still enlisted, of course, and so I was not able to personally publicize the book in any, proper fashion.
You seem to have made up for that over time. Not in the least being your stepping into the ring with Sonny Liston in 1961.
This was before the fight with Patterson, and it seemed an outrageous thing at the time, of course, but, in fact, perhaps it still does. Yeah, it was just one of those things of, it was an idea dreamed up by my agent at the time, and George Plimpton. Something like this always seemed to happen at one of George's parties. My agent thought it was a good idea at the time, thought it would make for good publicity, and of course, this is before the title, so Sonny needed the money. It was intended to go three rounds, and that was the agreement. I was about three steps into it when everything just went black. Yeah, poor Sonny, it wasn't his fault. He just didn't know his own strength. Of course, I can't say it made it any easier for him to get the title fight. It eventually had to be moved to Chicago.
And your next bout?
Refer to the incident with Betty?
Yes, Betty for Dan.
Oh, yes, Betty. Well, I'd taken on the chin from several certain feminists for some comments I'd made. I was under the impression, of course, that one was entitled to one's own personal opinion without coming under personal attack. But I suppose the public and private aspects of my life had become so entwined at the time that I opened myself up to it. Well, so Betty and I had made some comments regarding one another over various appearances on the Cabot Show, but let me set the record straight. I had nothing but the highest regard and respect for the woman. Now, as to the incident in question, the joke was certainly on me. Dick had put her up to it. In fact, it solicited George Plimpton to train her. So much like my bout with Liston was over before I knew it. I'm chatting with Dick, and the next thing I know, Betty comes out from backstage and demands we settle things, rather definitively, actually, with, of all things, an arm wrestling match. I politely decline, but since Dick was so invested, he was very persuasive, and this was live television, you remember, and then, much to my surprise, she pinned me.
'70s found you in the company of quite a mix of cultural provocateurs, which you capture in The Devil's Due.
I had already done a piece for Esquire on the Hells Angels. This was back sometime in the mid-50s, I guess. Sweet William, and yes, that is his actual name, was one of my contacts with the Angels, along with Melvin.
Belli.
Yes, well, Mel was making legal arrangements for the Rolling Stones to perform a free concert, which was originally going to be in Golden Gate Park, and it was, for other, you know, various reasons, was moved to the Altamont Speedway, just north of there. This was December 69, and, free, for God's sake. I mean, what were they thinking? Well, first, the misconception that the 60s died in the 60s, of course, at Altamont. It doesn't work that way. The 60s died in the 70s. So in effect, the cumulative essence of the 60s did not really even happen until the early 70s. Thus, the 60s only died in 1977, I would say, with Star Wars.
Excuse me. You mean with Reagan's 83 Star Wars speech?
No, Star Wars the film, or Star Wars the movie, quote-unquote. However you stated, culturally, that was the end of the expectation of reality.
With Ramones in the mid-1970s seemed like quite an unusual pairing at the time.
Well, yes, it was an interesting time for me, something very unexpected, so I thought, well, why not? It seemed Joey thought my sensibility would suit the band, so he asked if I'd produce the first record. Now, first let me say, contrary to rumor, I did not fire a gun in the studio. I merely placed a gun on the mixing board and locked the studio doors and suggested that we get to work. Yeah, well, call it incentive or call it discipline, at the end of the day, it was a creative relationship, I thought.
And speaking of relationships, after several marriages, you seem to have found some kind of domestic contentment with your current wife of 20 years. Any relation to that and the fact that the last 20 years have been considerably less public?
Well, sometimes you don't understand these things till you're a bit older. At least I didn't. In the end, I found it was family life that sustained me. I no longer felt the desire for public attention, the little vanities. I felt the urge to write again, just write.
With your new book, Roman Follies, you're still not pulling any punches.
I would hope not, thank you. I still want to have an opinion. That's the duty of every citizen in a democracy, I feel. And as this is probably my last book, you certainly consider that. Comes a time you realize things are winding down to their inevitable close and you want to maintain some dignity. It's almost that simple. Also, the older you are, the easier it is to make a fool of yourself, or at least you're less forgiven for doing so, I would say. When you're young, of course, it's expected of you. I'm an old man now, and I don't mind saying, and like everyone, I want to leave something worthwhile. That's all we can do.
Thank you, Vivian Stone.
Hello? Hello, are we alone?
Yes, I think so.
How did I sound?
You sounded fine.
Oh, good. Don't tell anyone I left my upper partials at home this morning.